This is the March session of the Nebraska Court of Appeals. My name is David Arterburn. I'm from Papillion. I am pleased to be joined today on my left by Judge Larry Welch from Plattsmouth, and on my right by Chief Judge Frankie Moore from North Platte. We have one case on the afternoon call today, and that is State versus Caesar. I would remind counsel in your arguments that these arguments are live streamed, so if there's any sensitive information or names that you do not wish to use, keep that in mind for purposes of the streaming of the arguments. So once you approach, I will call the name of the case again, but counsel for the appellant, you may approach. And again, the name of this case is State of Nebraska versus Caesar. And counsel, you may begin your argument.
May it please the court, my name is Desiree Stormont, and I'm a deputy Douglas County attorney. I represent the appellant, the State of Nebraska, in this matter. This case is one of a premeditated attack on the life of Lacey P. by Mr. Nicholas, putting Ms. Page in grave danger while she ran down the halls of Burke High School, being stabbed numerous times along the way, fighting for her life. The District Court of Douglas County abused its discretion by transferring this case to the juvenile court. A sound basis, in fact, did exist to retain this matter in the District Court and for the court to deny the juvenile transfer. The District Court made its error in its ruling to transfer this case, one of which was not justified by the facts and evidence presented, both through in-court testimony as well as the exhibits offered. Many factors within Nebraska Statute 43-276 were supported by the record, made both in court and through those exhibits. I'd like to note some of those most important factors were the age of the juvenile, the age and circumstances of the other individuals involved, consideration for public safety, the motivation for the offense, security of public safety requiring that the juvenile continue in secure detention or under supervision past the age of minority, and I think most importantly in this case, the extreme violence of this offense. As this court's aware, the factors are to be weighed and balanced in a test, weighting the public protection and societal security against the practical and non-problematical rehabilitation of that juvenile. Again, as I initially indicated, I think most importantly and most striking of this particular case is just truly the violent nature of this offense. This wasn't a heat-of-the-moment decision spurred by an argument and that occurred on that day, but instead a very carefully planned act of extreme violence. Nicholas took numerous calculated steps in order to effectuate what he wanted to do to Lacey on that day. He took those steps by deciding to bring that knife to school, obtaining a bathroom pass, planning and knowing when Lacey would be in the halls. The video offered into
evidence.
Where is
the evidence of him obtaining a bathroom pass in advance?
Your Honor, that information would have been obtained through the exhibit number one, which contained all of the police reports.
What page number?
Your Honor, I apologize. I do not have.
I've read the exhibit, and I don't recall that, and so I was wondering what page it was.
I apologize. I don't have that exact information in front of me.
Okay.
Certainly, I think most everyone can agree it was a pretty significant event, but it's balanced against the expert evidence in this case that both experts, as I understand it, suggest the case should be transferred, that Nicholas suffers from a mental illness but is being treated for it, and that through that treatment he has really turned things around, and they feel that he can continue to be rehabilitated within the time period. So can you address why the court abused its discretion in relying upon those experts?
Absolutely. While we look at, again, that balancing test of all of those factors, I can appreciate that one of the factors does include best interests of the juvenile. And I think that the evidence that you're referencing in relation to those specific reports made by those two individuals, those are in support of that factor. But as far as the balancing test, the court does not need to, in its decision, equally balance each one of those factors. And I think that's where the state takes the position that although there is evidence in support, just like in many cases, there's evidence to support best interests of the juvenile might be to access those services through juvenile court. I think that the totality of the circumstances and the totality of the evidence, including the violence, including the age of the victim in this case, including, quite honestly, the need to protect the public. I think that at the time of this incident, time of the court's order remained only 15 months of supervision. I think paying attention to the seriousness and egregiousness of this case, an assault in the first degree and a use, regardless of whether or not the supervision is through incarceration or through a period of probation or through a period of post-release supervision, courts are not giving 15-month sentences on cases of this type of egregious act of violence. And I think that's where the balance of that would weigh in the favor and in, I guess, towards the abuse of discretion, given, again, the totality of all of the evidence.
Can I ask you a couple of questions about the timeline of this case? Now, it's my understanding the motion to transfer was not filed until March of 2019.
Correct.
The event occurred in October of 2018, so there was about a six-month period that passed before there was even a motion on file.
Correct.
So I'm not concerned about that. But from the time the motion was filed until there was a hearing was about another 6 months. Our record accounts for some of that, but the record that we've been provided doesn't tell us much of anything that happened between May in September. Can you account for why there was such a long delay? Because that goes to your argument, I think, of lack of time. Yeah, we've had all this, by statute, we're supposed to get these things done in 20 days or something like that. Yet we're 6 months. So
absolutely.
What can you tell us about
in addressing that, I guess, timeline-wise and the way that this case occurred, that motion was on file. We had hearings scheduled. Defense counsel, per my recollection of this case, did in fact request continuances. There was a hearing that was set during the June to July timeline, during which the state received defense counsel Dr. Matheson's report only 3 days prior to the actual hearing itself.
Well, your motion that quotes that was actually in May, is your May 14th.
May 14th.
So that's accounted for. But then from that, and then we have Dr. Hartman's report that came in at the end of May. But then we go 3 more months after we have all the experts' reports in.
Absolutely.
What happened there?
There, based upon the court's calendar that was scheduled, we did have an additional continuance to set that hearing for that September date in order to allow. There was a time period during which the state received defense counsel's evaluation, and the state made the decision to then have Dr. Klaus Hartman do that evaluation. That is where some of the original or, I guess, early delay came from. And then, again, based on the court scheduling, that's how we got to the September date, and that's how we got to that particular hearing date.
Thank you.
Is it fair to take that into consideration, though, in our analysis of this case? Don't we look at it as of the time of the hearing, as the time of the order, I should say?
Just so that I understand your question, the time of the order as in the order from November or the time of the hearing that happened?
Well, either one. I mean, if there's a delay, do we take that delay into consideration against the juvenile when we're looking at what time remains for rehabilitation?
I guess from the state's position, and regardless of where the court looks at the timeline of that, I think that the amount of time needed for rehabilitation, even if we factor in those additional few months, the state's argument remains the same, that the need for supervision and the totality of the circumstances and the need to protect the public and the victim in this case would far exceed even that time period.
So let me ask you about that for a second. So from the perspective that we have to approach this, we're doing that balancing act. Courts do that balancing act. On the one end, we have the rehabilitation of the juvenile and his best interest. And we're weighing that against that societal protection, right?
Yes.
So would you agree with me, at least on the one side of the ledger there, in doing that balancing analysis, that this evidence is it's best for this youth that he be rehabilitated through the juvenile process? There was no evidence to the contrary in that regard. Would you agree with me?
Absolutely.
So that's on one side of the balancing. So now on the other side, we're looking at what you're suggesting, which is the risk to society. So we're balancing that. What evidence is there in this record when both experts specifically opined, as I understand it, that we don't believe that there is a risk to the public here?
I think even within looking at the experts' information, one of the things to consider in that and that the court had access to was the fact that there was testimony relating to this particular individual's mental health issues that weren't just acute at the time that this occurred. Testimony was elicited, I believe, both through the direct examination as well as my cross-examination of Dr. Matheson, that in fact the juvenile did have ongoing and continuous mental health issues that hadn't been treated, which resulted in this particular incident. And I would argue that that would be in support of the state's position.
I'm going to take you over a little bit, and Mr. Davis will add the time to your time. We only have one argument, so we're going to give you both a plenty of time to argue your cases. I guess my question is this: is first of all, how is this case distinguishable from the Supreme Court's decision and the facts of State versus Tyler P?
I would argue that in this case we have a greater level of concern for public safety and balancing between the defendant's, Nicholas's actions in this case, in, I guess, comparison to the case of State versus Tyler P. I think there is evidence that this is an acute issue that has been ongoing. The circumstances and the intimacy of the violence in this particular case, I think, also sets it aside from what occurred in the Tyler P. case, the motivation for this case, and even, I guess, I would point to as telling regarding the concerns relating to even his statements that he made, the obsessive nature of his notes that were in the exhibit that the state offered relating to his statements even after the incident, that there is serious, serious public safety concerns, not only for the victim, but also that this type of behavior is something that is very deep-rooted in him that requires that additional supervision.
Okay. And one final question that I had is, your argument is that if he ages out at 19, there's nothing more the state can do. Is that correct?
Your Honors, it's my understanding that he is about to turn 18 in April, and based upon the juvenile system and the abilities of probation through the juvenile justice system, that even with that year, there's very little that...
No, that's not my question. My question is, could not the state bring a mental health proceeding to keep him in a psychiatric facility if he was mentally ill and dangerous at the time he aged out of the juvenile system?
As far as a Board of Mental Health proceeding?
Yes.
I don't know that the facts and circumstances of this would support a full-fledged Board of Mental Health circumstances. I don't handle those types of cases, but I guess I cannot say no to you in response to that, that isn't a possibility. I just don't know whether or not in this particular case that is actually a viable circumstance given the involvement of the parents in this case.
Okay. Any other questions?
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much.
How much did we go over?
3 minutes and 18 seconds.
All right, please add that to Mr. Davis's time.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is James Martin Davis. I'm the attorney for the juvenile in this case. First thing I want to do is kind of a housekeeping matter. in two places in my brief, we indicated that the information was filed on November 13, 2019. It was filed in 2018. You, when I first began practicing law, I had a IBM Select typewriter. I thought that was a wonder of technology. Then came the word processors, and so I still write my briefs on yellow pages and legal pads. So it's not my staff's fault for making that typographical error. I looked at my yellow pages, and I couldn't tell whether it was a 2014, 18, or 19. So there was no that's important in terms of the time that we're talking about. You know, in terms of answering some of Judge Artemer's questions, I can probably do that right from the beginning. The Tyler P. or Tyler Pixel case was my case. In that instance, the difference in that case is really twofold. In that case, he was shooting at deputies. I didn't charge him with attempted murder in that case. But there wasn't a delay too much there in terms of having the hearing the decision. In this case, the reason for the delay, and I have to go outside the record a little bit on this case, is because I think it was in May we had an evaluation done by the state's expert, and he came back and saying that, well, this kid ought to go to juvenile court. My expert says it goes to juvenile court. So I had two experts and I visited with counsel, and she says I had talked to her boss. And so there was a delay there where I think there was an anticipation they were going to look for another expert. But finally, after several months, we had the hearing without their second expert, where I had asked and offered to put Dr. Hartman's analysis and report into the record, which is very unusual. If, you know, from past cases, Dr. Hartman is usually a witness for the state. My client, of course, had Dr. Matheson, who testified. This is only like the second time he's ever had a kid who's rehabilitated so well, and 75-80% of the time he doesn't recommend the transfer to juvenile court. But, you know, in this case, in terms of the Board of Mental Health, when he gets out, I think you're right there, but it has to be evidenced by some recent act. Somebody is mentally ill or dangerous as evidenced by some recent act. And so there'd have to be some recent act there. And the recommendation here, too, and I think everybody's lost sight of that, is that the two doctors recommended that he go to a PRST facility, a psychiatric residential treatment facility, during that time. They're not saying letting him out. You know, he needs to be institutionalized for the time period until he does age out. But, you know, I'm interested in this case because of the fact that what the state's asking you to do, they're not asking you to review this on the basis of abuse of discretion. Basically, what they're asking you to do is review this case de novo, which is not the standard of review. What they're saying is they disagree with the judge's decision. Well, the judge heard all the evidence, made his determination, and now they're saying the evidence is wrong. And so they want you to set aside. That's a review de novo. You know, in terms of, I even wanted to file a motion for summary affirmance because the assignment of error isn't even a proper assignment. It says, assignment of error, a sound basis existed for retaining the matter in district court, denying the motion to transfer to juvenile court. That's an opinion. That's not an assignment of error. Typically, when they say this, that they allege the assignment, the court abused its discretion in allowing this evidence or not granting this or doing whatever it was that is defined as a judicial discretion. This is a judicial abuse of discretion exists only when the reasons or rulings of a trial court are clearly untenable, unfairly depriving a litigant of substantial rights and denying a just result in matters submitted for disposition. Nothing you heard from Desiree or nothing that you saw in the brief indicates that his rulings were clearly untenable. I mean, they were certainly factual. It was a well-reasoned, well-written opinion. That in Pixel, we didn't. In that case, Tyler P., the judge ruled from the bench, and in this case, we had a lengthy hearing. We had witnesses from both sides testify in favor of transfer, and we had the judge write out an opinion which recognized the extent of the violence and talked about it. But, you know, and that's why we have judges. You know, in Pixel, that case that I had, it was a year and a half ago or so, they said there's no arithmetical computation or formula required in a court's consideration of the statutory criteria of factors.
So, also, I mean, under that, we can, in our review, determine whether the court abused its discretion in giving maybe too much weight to the rehabilitative opinions and not enough weight to the seriousness of the offense?
I don't think so, Judge. I think that's de novo. I think in this case, you have to determine if the judge abused
it. That's what I said. We have to determine if the judge abused its discretion, discretion in applying the balancing test.
Well, no, I don't think you can, no disrespect, but I think that's why I have judges. He did the balancing. He weighed the evidence.
Well, this is why we have appeals, so we can determine whether he abused his discretion.
If there were error. Mm-hmm. And there isn't any error in the. You can't say that there's a legal error by him. His balancing is his determination. That's why we have judges. If he committed some error in the law, certainly you can reverse him. That's what de novo is. Abuse of discretion is. De novo is if you're going to review the facts and say he was wrong.
Of the balancing test is a legal question. Would you agree with that?
No, I think that's a determination that the judge makes. That's why we have judges. He weighs the credibility of the witnesses. He listens to them.
But we could still find an abuse of discretion.
Well,
the law doesn't say we rubber stamp because we have an abuse of discretion standard,
yeah,
does it?
Yeah. Well, I think that you're getting closer to de novo, and
let me get to my real point, Mr.
Sure.
Davis, which is this is a very serious act. Would you agree with that?
I would.
And my understanding of the record is this young man was being treated for his mental illness before the act and was on medication. And so he's being treated now for his mental illness, and he's apparently on medication. And how does that change the fear that this could reoccur and the safety of the public?
Well, we have two experts, one who opined pretty clearly that he didn't think there was going to be any danger to the public. And first of all, for the next 15 or 16 months, he's going to be in a locked facility. And then after that, the doctors testified within a reasonable degree of psychiatric and psychological certainty that they didn't think he was going to be a threat. It's in the judge's order, and I think it's also in my brief. We've quoted those parts where there isn't any evidence to the contrary that he is going to be a danger, other than the fact that they introduced the reports, and we saw the video, but the judge talked about the video and also talked about the arithmetical and balancing that he did. Mm-hmm. And he has to make his decision based on the evidence that's in front of him and take into consideration the uncontradicted expert testimony.
He doesn't have to accept it, though. Trial judges don't have to accept expert testimony, even if it's uncontradicted, do they?
No, yeah. Not at all. But he did in this case. And so that testimony was uncontradicted. We put on our case, and there wasn't any, you know, other than the fact that the state said it was violent. But so many cases are violent. There's a whole set of standards there and items that court has to consider. I mean, if you follow the state's argument to its logical life or death, every violent crime should be transferred. Should not be transferred, should be handled in district court. And that's not the case at all. The whole focus is the best interest of the child and rehabilitation. That's why you have a juvenile court. They're not found guilty in juvenile court. They're just, they admit or deny, and there's an adjudication and a disposition. They're not sentenced. That's,
they're not criminals, they're delinquents.
Exactly. And that's why we have to keep that in mind. I mean, you know, the public safety is only a factor. Violence is only a factor. And in this instance, you know, he was being treated, I mean, from the fourth grade on, it said. And then I don't know how clear the record is, but There were several people treated.
Was there any evidence of any violence towards anyone else prior to this incident?
There was no evidence whatsoever. Dr. Matheson talked about that. Also, the judge talked about that, saying that there was this was a one-off event, and it was not some. And in terms of one of the considerations they have is what his motivation was, and the doctor said it was motivated probably out of mental or psychological reasons, not because it was some criminal intent to kill. The evidence is really, I think, it's all totally one-sided, and I don't think that the fact that the state disagrees with this decision means that there was abuse of discretion in any kind. There's, in this instance, you know, there was, it would be, a trial judge, his findings are clearly untenable and unfairly depriving a litigant of a substantial right and denying a just result. Those are 1, 2, 3. I think you have to fight all three to say that there's an abuse of discretion. And who can say that his decision is clearly untenable when all the evidence supports him and when he spent so much time, considering it? How did that unfairly deprive a litigant of a substantial right?
If I understand the state, though, the state's position is this is a horrible, heinous act. We have a short period of time within which to rehabilitate him. How in the world can we say that there's no risk or danger to society here, that this isn't going to happen again?
Well, you can speculate all you want, but you have to base your decision on the record. I mean, then the court's speculating.
Well, the violence is part of the record.
Yeah, there's no
age of the juvenile is part of the record.
But you have the doctor saying you don't think there's going to be any danger in the future, because that has nothing to do with the rulings of the judge being untenable. That's, you have to consider what the judge did and the reason he did, not what
you
might
speculate. So if the judge had said, I'm looking at all the factors, but I find that the violence and the age of the juvenile outweigh the evidence about his rehabilitative possibilities, I'm denying the transfer. So under that circumstance and your argument, we would find no abuse of discretion.
That's right. That's exactly right. And that's what we've been confronted with in the past. It was only just a year and a half, 2 years ago, they changed this law. To Tyler P. was one of the first cases we had where the state could appeal or the defendant could appeal right after. Before, we'd have to wait till the case was over.
We're very aware of that. Yeah. We've had several of the cases.
Yeah. Well, in this instance, you have to find not what you think, but you have to find specifically what it was the judge did that was untenable and what it was he did that unfairly deprived a litigant of a right. That's the law. And that's the law that, is in...
Or if it's against justice, reason, and evidence. I mean, they're...
Right. I think that means totally untenable. But, in this case, I think, again, the delay was in part caused by the state. I mean, they were caught with their pants down because their expert all of a sudden says, well, we go along with you, Mr. Davis. We want him transferred. And so there was a delay. I don't know exactly what it was, but I think Hartman's came in May, and then we had it September... the September hearing finally, because I think the state was scrambling to get another expert. I want him to throw in the towel. But I asked Desiree, why don't you throw in the towel? No, I got to talk to her boss. And so there's 4 months there, and so they can't use that as an excuse. Well, they were scrambling, looking for another.
All right. Well, I think expert. Your time is about finish, Mr. Davis.
Okay. I thought you were going to give me another 3 months.
You got it.
Oh, I did. Oh, okay.
We added on at the beginning.
Well, yes.
So.
Well, thank you all very
right.
much.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. All right. There is no time left for rebuttal. So thank you very much, counsel, for appearing today and presenting your cases. The case will be taken under submission. We'll enter a decision as quickly as we can. Thank you. You're excused.
Thank you.